Well, there's lots of discussion in the missions world about short-term trips. Do they help or do they hurt? Should we be doing more of them or less? And if we do them, how do we do them right so that they have a long-term impact? We've talked about it before on this show, but we have a fresh face to explore that important conversation and more with today on The Missions Show. Greetings and welcome to The Missions Show, where we explore your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined for another frolic through the meadows of missiology by my good friend and compatriot and partner in crime, the Scott W. Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And whether you're joining us online, on your podcast app, watching over the air, however you are here today, we're glad you're here. If you're a podcast listener, leave us a five-star review and positive rating in your podcast platform of choice. That'll help other people not only discover the content, but put it to use so that we can, well, make disciples of all the nations. That's what we're trying to do here on The Missions Show. And Scott, I'm excited to return to the topic of short-term missions and mission trips today, because I think this is really one of those hot button topics, isn't it? Where you have really smart people, really studied, theologically astute people that disagree on the best approach. I mean, famously, we've talked about with our friend Darren Carlson, who's been on this show multiple times in the past, you know, you have somebody who was in the founder's seat in a short-term missions trip leading organization, who was at the very same time publishing articles to the Gospel Coalition saying, you should probably cancel your short-term missions trip. And so you find that there's just a range of opinion, even within the same person or the same organization. It just shows, I think, Scott, how important it is, right?
It's a huge topic because we know that billions of dollars are spent on short-term missions. We know that lots of Christians are going on these trips. It's a huge thing in the missions world. And it's not just going to go away tomorrow. You know, even if all the people who are the biggest critics of short-term missions wanted to go away, it's not going to go away. So the question isn't really whether it should go away or not. The better question is, like, is there a way that we can do this in a way that maximizes the benefit and helps the missionaries, helps the church that's sending, and helps the people on the ground? And so we have a guest here today that's going to help us navigate some of that. So welcome, Scott McCoy. And Scott, you tell us a little bit about yourself and your ministry with ABWE.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. Hi, Alex. My name is Scott McCoy. I am the head of partnerships here at ABWE. And it's my passion to help people do short-term mission trips well. I took my first mission trip in 1999. I wasn't saved yet, which is an interesting story in itself, but it's what led to me getting saved. And I've been on dozens and dozens since then. And I've seen good ones and bad ones. And the good ones are great, really, for the way they can transform hearts and minds.
So you've heard some of the critiques. How do you respond to that? Why should churches still be doing short-term mission trips? Cards on the table. I think they're still valuable. I think they matter. I don't know that every single human being should go on one, right? I think if we're going to do it well, that means that the right people should go on the right trips at the right time for the right reasons, right? So how would you encourage churches to think about the critiques and reasons why they should still invest in them?
Well, I think that your idea there of customization is a great point, because if you can match the giftedness and the passions, the skills of the people at the church with the opportunity in the field, get them plugged in with something that they feel passionate about, then they're going to be more effective and they're going to be useful to the people on the field, but also then come back and apply what they've learned. And if they didn't learn, but to maybe hone their skill when they're back at the local church.
Yeah. One of the critiques has been over the years, you know, it turns into a kind of poverty tourism. I appreciate this. So our children's school, the high school, they do they no longer call it a missions trip. They're doing a trip. I think they might've just gotten back. They went to a Latin American country. I don't remember which one, but they didn't call it a missions trip. There was a ministry component. But there was also a study abroad component. There was also probably a little bit of tourism happening. It was a smattering of different things. And so they didn't call it a missions trip. They called it, I don't know, a cross-cultural exposure trip or something like that. I think that's wise, because one of the problems that we run into is, okay, we're here to do missions, but it's not always missions that's getting done. Sometimes you're just being exposed to another country or another culture, which has value, that has real value. But we just have to be careful not to fold that back into the definition of what missions is or the type of impact that you're having. Usually the person going is more impacted maybe than anyone that they come into contact with. So how do you help? And you're working with missionaries. Here's the other thing. You're actually working with the long-term missionaries who are hosting these people. So you're not just sending people off and hoping they have a good time. You're directly accountable to make sure that when somebody goes on one of these trips and someone serves, that it is having a healthy long-term impact on the field. How do you encourage missionaries then to make sure it doesn't fall into that rut of just poverty tourism, just a vacation experience, and to make sure that there's meaningful discipleship that's happening, meaningful impact that's happening in terms of ministry, serving, using their gifts?
Yeah, that's right, Alex. LaunchPoint works with the church teams, so and the participants, the leaders from the church team, the pastors, to help the church think about their outcomes. What do they want? Why are they sending this team? Mm. What outcomes would they like to see from that? And then how can we help them achieve those outcomes? And then we work with the missionaries as well as to planning out the itinerary for the trip and what the missionary, would like accomplished. I think it's really cool for the missionaries. They get to have a sort of a double bang for the buck, so to speak, because they're going to be accomplishing some ministry in the field. If the trip is designed and prepared well, you know, there's a footnote there, but also when the people that go on the trip experience transformation, because there's a spiritual formation component that is a part of the mission trip as well for the individuals. Yeah. And that has a multiplication effect.
So you're talking about the spiritual transformation that can happen. You're an example of that. You shared, you went on your first mission trip as an unbeliever.
I did.
And you came back as a believer, or you became a believer shortly thereafter. Tell us that story.
I came back as an almost believer.
Almost believer. I don't know. I don't see that category in scripture. I feel like you're in or you're out. Yeah. What happened? How did that come about?
So I wouldn't recommend this for most people, right? To this being your reason to go on a mission trip, but I was a vacationer. Yeah. So I lived in Austin, Texas at the time, and my church was taking a mission trip to Mexico. I'd been in Austin for about 5 years, hadn't been to Mexico yet. And it's close enough. I thought, well, $300. All expenses paid, includes transportation, food, board. Where am I going to get a better deal than this to go with my singles group to Mexico?
All I have to do is put up a few shingles, you know, yeah.
Not even that. It was VBS. And so I just had to run, you know, work with some kids. So I went to the preparation meetings and I realized that I was not like these people. So it's a mega church that I attended in Austin, and the auditorium sat 2,500 people. And the trip was for, let's say, 15 to 20 people doing VBS, people that had done it before. This was my first trip. I didn't know what I was doing. But they worked me into their prep meetings. I found a place to fit. I was going to take my printer and print out custom designs for t-shirts for the kids to iron on that fit the Bible story. A nice way for me to fit in. I took my camera and took some good pictures, and the people appreciated that. But what I saw on that trip is what changed my life. Because when I looked at the people in the church that came to church on every Sunday, I didn't see much difference between the people in the pews and the people in the world. And that didn't inspire me to want to change my life. But on that mission trip, I saw 15 Christians being Christians in a context where they were loving people, some that weren't lovable. They were actually reading the Bible, getting up in the morning and reading their Bible. They were living out their faith, modeling it in ways I hadn't seen before. And I left that week thinking to myself, if this is what being a Christian is, I want to be a Christian. And so that's the first time I ever said those words to myself. Wow. It took 6 months before I responded to the call and walked down to the front and gave my life over to Christ. But I did.
That's beautiful. And we know of other examples and stories of that, right, Scott?
When I was a young youth pastor, it was my responsibility to put together the mission trips. And I can't imagine why in the world you would ask someone in their mid to late 20s to plan overseas trips. But I was smart, and I was not yet an ABWE missionary, but I reached out to ABWE and they helped us put that together. Actually, Rick Kaner, who a lot of you guys know, was a huge part of putting those trips together. And the reality is, like, the training, the preparation, the details, they make or break the trip, you know. And by God's grace, I think the trips that we had were well planned, well thought out. It ended up being very transformational, both for me, ended up leading me to go to the mission field, but also for our team. Many of those young people are still serving the Lord today. So what are some of the common mistakes that churches make when they're planning and putting together a short-term mission trip that Launch Point is really trying to help?
I think some of the most common mistakes churches make, I'll start with number one in my mind, is that they don't ask the questions about the cultural context so they can prepare. Mm. So they send a team over, but they're not thinking about what are we stepping into that is going to either be helpful or hurtful to the missionary or to the nationals. Mm. So, for example, a vignette. I was recently in Greece and heard a missionary tell me a story about a team that came, and they did a VBS camp, and they brought paintball with them. And so they did a paintball camp, and it was a big hit with the kids, right? They loved it. And when they left, the national partners from that church plant felt deflated because they said, how could we ever do
we compete?
That? We can't afford it. We don't have access to those things. And so if that church had just thought for a moment to talk to the missionaries about what can we do in your context, how can we help your nationals do VBS camps better, and then brought with them the materials that they needed to pull that off in a way that then the locals could, that would be so much more beneficial.
Which is a very typical American type of thing. We're going to come in, we're going to wow everyone, we're going to pull off a great, fun, successful program, and maybe we're not thinking as much about the long-term consequences of that.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, because the number two would be checking in with the missionary again to find out what materials are available in country and what need to be brought. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had a trip to Jamaica not too long ago where it's hard to get paint in Jamaica. Like, I wouldn't have known that. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, this church team asked. And so the missionary, because they're painting murals was a part of what they wanted to accomplish on this team trip. Mm-hmm. And so they bought a few colors, but kept it limited. And then the team knew that they were going to mix their colors for the murals so they could actually plan and design ahead of time before they got to the country. And they're prepared. They brought paintbrushes. They brought mixing vessels because those are hard to come by as well. Mm. The missionary supplied the paint, and it was a success.
You've alluded to some transformation that can happen in people's lives, not just a story like your own of somebody coming to Christ in faith, but also further steps of spiritual development, even deciding to serve long term. You know, what leads to that decision? What are some of the stories of that? That's what we want to get into in just a moment, right after our break. Hey, listeners, we know you believe in missions. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to or watching this show. But have you ever wondered what your next step with the Great Commission should be? Well, wherever you are with missions, if you're ready to get serious and find what your next step is, ABWE's 24-hour demo event is for you. Now, you can go to demo.abwe.org. Again, that's demo.abwe.org, and use the promo code podcast for a discount on your registration fee. So it takes all excuses away. What are you waiting for? Come find your next step with the Great Commission at demo.abwe.org, promo code podcast. We're back with Scott McCoy, who oversees Launch Point, the short-term missions arm of ABWE. Mission trips can be transformative experiences. And maybe someone like yourself, maybe they come to Christ in faith for the first time through an experience overseas. What are some of the other outcomes that you've seen? I know we're always in the missions world, we're hoping that people take long-term steps to stay as a missionary. And people do that, although in some of my study, I've found, you know, that happens, but the trip isn't usually the deciding factor. Oftentimes that person felt called before they went on that first trip. So there's a lot of different factors at play in someone's calling. So what are some of the outcomes that you've seen of either personal transformation or of the missionaries or of the nationals on the other side of one of these trip experiences?
That is central to where my heart is for the why to do these trips is transformation of the people that go, as well as the transformation of the people that receive. But you mentioned something about the call, and just a brief comment on that. A pastor I spoke with recently who was a little bit nervous. They hadn't done a mission trip in 20 years, and we helped them, you know, take their first trip in 20 years. And he was concerned about how to get the team ready. But he relied on what he knows. He relied on the Lord, what he knows of Scripture, and said, well, if to his people, if God's calling you to go on this trip, then you need to go.
Yeah.
Because there were some doubts, right, with the people. Should I go? Should I not go? Should I stay? There were some fears about the personal security in a different country. Some of these people have never been out of the country before, out of the USA, I should say. Well, so
we just had a member of my team go on a trip where she couldn't leave the missionary's house. She wasn't allowed to leave the house because it was that dangerous. The crime where she was that out of control. So, you know, it does happen.
Yeah, it can happen. And so that struck fear in the hearts of some of these people that went on this trip. But the pastor prepared them well with scripture. And then on the trip, the transformation that took place in the hearts. I'll just tell a few vignettes from this trip because it's really pretty cool. One lady came back and said that the Lord showed her a void in her heart that she didn't know it existed and filled it. So she went on this trip not realizing what she was going to experience. But she said, we left as a team and we came back as a family.
Oh, wow.
And so there's bonding that happened within this team and in that church body. That's a pretty big deal to create that kind of unity.
And that's hard. You can't build that on a Sunday morning.
No.
Easily.
Right.
You can only do that when you have your shoulder to the plow together.
When you're in the thick of things doing ministry together.
Yeah.
Another lady from that same trip had mentioned that she was really nervous about, they were doing prayer walking and praying for people as they walked. They were actually shopping for souvenirs. It was the last day of the trip and they decided to pray for people. Now, can you imagine a bunch of Americans doing that in, say, downtown Philly?
What could go wrong?
They want to pray for people. But they did it in this part of Jamaica. And what they found is how easy it was to just simply say, would you like us to pray for you? We're here on a mission trip. Can we pray for you? And the people would say yes. They would pray. And then what they saw was that some of those people would actually go pray for other people. I don't think you'd see that in this country too much. But what happened in the hearts of those people on the trip is when they came back, they said, I'm going to pray for everybody because now I know how, and I know how easy it is, and I know how much other people value it.
That's a tool in their tool belt they can use now, right, Scott?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen, people, try things overseas that they've never would have tried at home. And then go home and start serving in those ways, back in the States. One of the huge benefits I know I've seen is just watching people go overseas, especially if they go visit one of their own missionaries that maybe their church sent out or their church supports, and then watching how excited they are to get back and get involved in their mission committee, getting involved in the mission team at their church and begin serving, or maybe even going overseas themselves. And that kind of brings up this concept of the long-term impact, because we've also on the other side obviously seen, camp ministries and overseas missions trips where people go overseas and they come back and they just settle back into their old way of life and they're determined everything's going to change, but then actually nothing changes. And that's not what we want. I know that's not what you want. It's certainly not what the missionaries want or the people who are supporting a trip want. So how can pastors and church leaders maximize this long-term impact of a trip once the team gets back home?
Yeah, Scott, another great question. I think one thing that they can do is consider preparing for a mission trip as part of their discipleship program. Not that discipleship is a program, so let me rephrase that. Part of their discipleship, because you're going to have a chance to encourage leadership development. We encourage the use of the apprentice model when you're on mission. So if you're not familiar with what that is, it's simply, I do, you watch, we talk. I do, you help, we talk. You do, I help, we talk. You do, I watch, we talk, right? So you're slowly bringing somebody into a new skill with ministry. If you use the apprentice model, you can do that when you're preparing for a trip. You can definitely do that when you're on a trip. You can do that with nationals. So for example, if you're doing a soccer camp, you can help nationals through the apprentice model become equipped to actually lead their own soccer camps when they do youth ministry. So if a pastor would consider preparing for a mission trip as part of disciple making and leader development, that's a huge step.
That breakdown alone of the apprenticeship model, that I'd never heard it explained that crisply. That was helpful. I feel like there's people that can benefit from that just alone on its face. What encouragements would you give to pastors specifically who, I don't know, well, I'll pick on our church. I don't think we've ran a short-term missions trip in recent memory. I think a lot of pastors care about missions in theory, right? We support the missionaries that we support. We invite them in occasionally. We try to give generously. Maybe we even preach about it once in a while, and we challenge people to consider God's heart for the nations. What would you say to church leaders to give them that extra oomph of initiative to say, like, you're doing all these things just fine. Here's why. Even if you don't have a sent worker from your congregation that you're going to visit, even in the absence of that, here's why it matters that you take not everyone, but at least an elite few from your church to do something cross-culturally. What would you say to that pastor or church leader listening?
The first thing that comes to mind is obedience, because Jesus asked us to in Matthew, as recorded in Matthew 28. Right, the Great Commission. Mm. So obedience is my number one go-to reason always, because we're asked to reach the ends of the earth with the gospel. Another big reason is because it is going to transform people in ways that they can't do without a different worldview. When they see another culture, when they experience ministry, when they experience the joy, the love, especially if you're in contexts that people are still persecuted for their faith, not that that's the only way to experience it, but that just amplifies the impact that people feel from the experience when they go and see and experience that with nationals.
Scott, what about you? I'm just curious, you know, pastoral experiences that you've had. I know you've sent out trips. I know you've led or received them in some ways. What would be some final words of wisdom for you before we wrap up here and go into our overtime?
I think having reasonable expectations and recognizing that I think so many times from the state side, we are looking to go in and have this maximum impact and, come back and tell about how things were changed. And I think having a reasonable understanding of there's going to be a part of this as just catching a vision for the mission, which is hugely important. There's another part of it that's encouraging the missionaries. And if that's not a part of your mission, then please don't do it. That'd be my one of my thoughts. But then realizing that you coming and caring about someone's culture, you coming as in a learning posture, you filling in and serving where you can, that is an encouragement to the national believers to know that there are other Christians that just love them and care about them and want them to succeed and are behind them. And so I think that's something I would want our churches to understand as well. And then celebrate the fact that God is working in your people's lives. You know, we set it out on our last mission trip before we were called to the field of praying that God would call someone from our team to go overseas. And sure enough, God called my wife and I. I didn't expect that, but God was faithful to answer that. And actually others from that team went on the mission field too for 1 year or longer. And so I think having reasonable expectations and then looking for God to do that.
Scott, you're absolutely correct. That's one of the great collateral effects of a mission trip. Is that I would say 90%. I haven't done the numbers officially, but for sure I've surveyed many of the missionaries that serve here at ABWE, and the vast majority of them have been called to missions because of an experience they had on a short-term trip.
Yeah.
You know, they felt something, they responded to it, they went short-term first, confirmed their calling, and that's a huge benefit for a pastor or a church to consider sending short-term trips.
And that matches some of the data in one particular study that I've seen, which found, and it surveyed missionaries across denominations, across continents, nationalities, and it found that of all of those serving long-term, something like 99% of them had begun short-term. So there's a correlation piece there as well. But when they were asked what the decisive factor was, you know, was it the trip? Or was it something else? They didn't say the trip alone was the decisive factor. They pointed to some type of an internal calling experience, which we can't manufacture. And, you know, for the record, there's external elements of calling as well. You have to be qualified. Your church leaders should affirm you. There has to be a real opportunity, right? But there is also the internal call. You should desire the work, just like Paul says to elder candidates. You know, it's a good thing to desire. And then the other thing that they mentioned that was also decisive was pastors consistently preaching about God's heart for the nations.
Yes.
So that's the trifecta, right? You get to experience something cross-culturally, your church is supportive of it, and then you begin to feel the internal draw and desire and call that's confirmed by other people. And out of that synergy comes someone long-term, somebody invested long-term serving.
Sometimes we lack the imagination. And we just can't imagine what it would look like to live in another place and to serve with other people or even learn another language. And when we are in a situation that's very different than what we've experienced before, our imagination gets expanded. We began to understand, oh, maybe I could serve in this way. Or we see the skills and the personality that we have that we don't really value very much. And then we see how we're able to function in another place. We realize, wow, I could do this. And I could imagine myself living in this place. I could see myself serving in these ways, as well as getting a better understanding of like, what are the challenges? And that's one thing I would definitely encourage people on the field is get a chance to pull the missionaries aside and really listen to like, what are some of your heartaches? What are some of the burdens of your heart? You know, listen to them struggle with the ideas of, how do I take care of my parents that are back in the States? You know, how do I help my kids transition from living in this foreign country to go to college and the challenges that come along with that, and really understand those things so that one, you can be a better partner, you can be a better prayer warrior, you can serve and give better, but also that you can count the cost if indeed God does call you to answer that call and go overseas as well.
Absolutely. So if people want to find a trip, either as an individual or a team, maybe a church wants to set up a trip, they can go to launchpointmissions.org and they can use the contact information there, and that'll pretty much go to you. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. There's several trips that are available to take as individuals or to schedule as a church team. Launchpointmissions.org is the place to find those trips. I highly recommend, though, if a pastor or a missions committee or even an individual listening to this is interested to go on a trip, that they send an email to launchpoint@abwe.org.
Okay.
Because I think the biggest value is when we customize a trip for a church's desired outcome, matching it to the giftedness of their people, to the opportunity in the field. Sometimes it's hard to know from looking at a website how to do that yourself.
Right.
And that's where the expertise of our team really comes in. And I would also encourage pastors to think about what Scott just said. Go on in a trip to encourage your mission partners, because the number one reason for missionary attrition, for them to leave the field, is the feeling of burnout, right? Or team conflict. Those are the top two reasons. And so when a missionary is visited by a team from one of their supporting or sending churches, they are able to cope with the challenges of being a missionary in ways that we can't even imagine, going back to what Scott said about imagining. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so for a church to own that, to say, yes, we are going to connect with our partner once a year, once every other year, whatever that rhythm might look like for that church, to actually own it, do it, because the missionaries appreciate it, and you'll keep missionaries on the field longer if you do.
That's right. Well, amen. Lots of good encouragements. We do want to not just talk about the upshot, positive sides, but for our overtime segment, we want to talk a little bit about what not to do, what never to do. That's what we're going to explore in our bonus segment for premium subscribers. You can get access as well at missionsshow.com/premium, and you can also get access within your Apple Podcasts app. But for now, all of us here at ABWE bid you farewell. Go and make disciples of all the nations.